On this episode of AV Week, we talk about the impact the U.S. election may have on the AV industry, new sales strategies, and Infocom International's international reach. All that and more next on AV Week.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
AV Week is brought to you by our fine group of underwriters, companies like Atlas IED. This is AV Week, episode 272, recorded Friday, November 11th, 2016. Live from AVEC 2016.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing. Scan.
Week.
Online.
This is AV Week.
This is AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audiovisual news and information. My name is Tim Albright. I am your host. Welcome. We are live. Well, sort of. When you're listening to this, we're not live. But we're coming to you from the AV Executive Conference in beautiful Key Biscayne, Florida. Thanks to Infocom for having us, for giving us a nice space to do. This will be a little bit reminiscent of our Infocom stuff and our CEDIA shows and ISE ones, where we kind of do a roundtable. One group, and we'll bring some other folks in. First and foremost, my mentor and the second best gentleman here, his name is Brock McGinnis. How are you, sir?
Good to be here as always, Tim.
All right. Also with us, Steven Greenblatt from Control Concepts, also the host of our State of Control show.
How are you?
I am well. And a young man I just met virtually about a month or so ago. He was one of our speakers. So thank you so much for coming. His name is Ian Altman.
Thanks for having me here, Tim.
All right. Ian, I will start with you. What is your impression of this event? I mean, you are a speaker, you're an author, you're a consultant. So you've been to a lot of these types of events. Just your impression of the executive conference in general.
What strikes me is that you've got a bunch of people who on paper would be competitors. Mm-hmm. Who are all coming together, and the major difference that I see in this audience is that it's people who have a genuine interest in taking things back they could actually put to work in their business. So at a lot of events, it almost feels like a boondoggle. So people show up, you know, they have a few drinks, they hang out. And by the way, it's not that people here aren't having a good time, but their focus is about what can I take back and put to work in my business? How can I actually help grow my business? How can I help develop my team? And that's what really struck me, is that there's people who kind of put any competitiveness aside and say, okay, how can we help each other and raise the bar for the overall industry? Which is, candidly, as someone who speaks at 60-plus events a year, there aren't that many of them where I get that vibe.
Very cool. Very cool.
I think that's a fabulous observation.
Yeah.
And the organizers of the AVEC conference will be proud to hear that. Everybody that comes here spends their own money. Nobody's sent here and has to come to AVEC. We're all coming seeking information that we don't have. And some of the businesses are small to mid-sized, and some are mid-sized to larger. But the largest AV business is still what your bank would call an SMB, and so we tend to have a lot of technical expertise, but we don't have a great deal of business expertise in a rapidly changing economy, particularly those of us, and you saw the average age of the crowd, those of us that have been around for 25 years plus, if we haven't learned anything in those past 25 years, we're already in trouble. So we're here because we're hungry and thirsty and need... not that kind of thirsty, Steve.
not this early.
Hungry and thirsty, and we need input from professionals and experts such as yourselves. And it helped that it was delivered so enthusiastically. You also really love what you do, and I think that I said that to you when you came off stage yesterday.
Thank you, Brock. Yeah, and in fact, I do love what I do. It's interesting for me because, and I'm flattered that you notice. Wow, you really love what you do. The most flattering thing for me is when I see that somebody is actually putting these ideas to work, and then whether it's tweets that I heard from Steve or other people where the key message points, people are tweeting those out, and I think to myself, wow, they're getting it. This is going to have an impact for them. And the most fun for me is 6 months after an event, when I get a tweet, an email, something from someone who says, we've implemented this, and now it's grown this other area of our business, and we're up 20%, and last year we were down. That is the payoff for me, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I, for one, am glad you were at AVEC. I learned a ton.
Thank you.
It was the exercises that we went through. Steve and I are on the same team, and we're looking forward to presenting those.
Great.
And our team's missing us right now, but, you know. They're carrying the load.
I'm sure they are. Yeah, I'm the spokesperson.
Steve, real quickly, because you've been to all four. This is the fourth annual one. You've been to all four. Give me an overview or an evolution from the very first one.
Sure.
And you don't have to be kind, because it was the first one, right? But all the way up until this one.
So I think the event has evolved, as you said, and first stemmed from... I think it used to be something called the Infocom 100, which I think then turned into the AV Executive Conference. It morphed. And the first one was more about the AV industry and what are the business challenges, what in our industry do we face, and how as a group can we overcome them. And I think that slowly it's shifted to having bigger name speakers, more content that is relevant to any business, and it helps us to understand that we're not in this small little bubble. That's just the AV industry. We're businesses just like other businesses, throughout the world, and we face similar challenges and have to apply similar principles. And particularly for me, what I valued the most was learning about sales, because from a technical background, that's not something that comes naturally. And it's something that I think is underestimated in our industry, because I think for my experience, we've had many years of growth and many years of prosperity, and sales may not have been the focus. And I think that having a good sales background and having the ability to refine the type of work that you're going after now can really help us quite a bit. And I think that we face some new challenges.
One of the points, though, that Ian made was that salesperson,
yes,
is becoming obsolete. The order taker is gone. The salesperson is becoming obsolete. And the subject matter expert is who the customer wants to listen to. Well, your customers have been listening to you as a subject matter expert for a long time, but I think a light bulb went off for a lot of us who've been thinking enterprise style sales forces, where instead of having all these AV people, we'll hire some folks from Pitney Bowes and send them out into the field, and if they can sell a copier, for gosh sakes, they got to be able to sell a video conferencing system.
Sure,
and that's not the case, and I've seen it fail in the field with some competitors, but that was one of the slides that I tweeted because I think that's just brilliant, Ian.
Well, and keep in mind, I appreciate you saying that. Keep in mind that the real point of that is not that sales is dead, but it's more if as a customer we would prefer to deal with a subject matter expert. It means that the evolution or the modernization of sales and marketing is all about demonstrating your expertise, being seen as the best resource for your customers, and you in essence want to position yourself so that people said, look, if I have to meet with this quote salesperson or the subject matter expert, if that's what it takes, if I have to pay to meet with them, that's what I'll do because they add that much value, as opposed to the old school method of always be closing. Well,
right.
Always be closing triggers a response from the buyer of always be closing the door to keep them out. So that doesn't really work effectively. And instead, we want to think about if we can uncover the problems that we solve with extraordinary results, then we'll attract people that are facing those challenges.
Right.
And all of a sudden, now it's that whole metaphor that we use of same side selling, of being on the same side of the table, putting puzzle pieces together. If your puzzle piece isn't the right fit for their puzzle, look, I mean, unless you're bringing in a jigsaw, it's not going to work. So you're better off finding that out early in the process rather than later.
Well, one of the old school sales maxims was that, you know, sales is just a process of helping somebody buy what they want, what they need, or what they ought to have. And the same side selling as a technique or an approach makes it actually much more comfortable, not just for the customer, but for everybody on our side of the table.
Exactly.
If we're sitting on that other side of the table. And there's a lot less failure stigma and stress for the people who are doing the, you know, who are presenting solutions, because it wasn't a lost sale. We're just not right, and this was one of the other points that that you had made, is that we're just not the right company for the problem that you have today.
Yeah.
But let's stay in touch, because we think you'll probably encounter, like many of our other clients, other problems that we can solve for you.
Yeah, and the beauty of that is that when that happens, the customer says, you know, I'm actually willing, when you call me in 4 months, to take your call. Because you didn't keep pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and getting resistance. It's an interesting thing. If I say to you, you know what, I don't think I'm the right fit for your organization, something interesting happens psychologically. You think to yourself, well, where are you a good fit for us? And if I say to you, we're the best thing ever, you say, well, not so fast, big fella. You know, slow down. The other element is that in an industry where technical expertise is so valued, like this one, the engineers often are resistant to having any role in sales, because their stereotypical vision of a salesperson is someone who is lacks integrity, and it compromises your ethics, and you say, I'm not going to do that. Once they realize, oh, wait a minute, all I'm doing is helping people solve problems better than they can solve for themselves. Oh, I can do that. I just didn't want to sell anything.
Exactly. Well, right.
When you do that, you end up selling things.
Yes. Yeah, it was a terrific message, and it resonated extremely well right across the conference floor. People
Great.
Were
yeah.
talking about it last night. You know, you've delivered a successful presentation when folks are talking about it at dinner, they're talking about it at the bar, and already thinking about how they can implement it. And one of the challenges we will find in our industry, if we have to have solution-providing salespeople, they're more expensive. They need way more training. There's a much greater investment. And I think we're going to probably see more companies promoting technical people into sales rather than teaching. And you referred to that, you know, teaching engineers to communicate better.
Yeah. Well, and oftentimes what I see in industries like yours is the way they grow their, quote, sales organization is by bringing in low to mid-level sales support people
right.
who, in essence, are tracking the process, who are helping with proposal development, who are keeping track of deadlines and deliverables, and their skills are more akin to a project manager than they are to a traditional salesperson. So they're the person who says to the engineer, look, we met with this client, everyone was excited. Remember we said we were going to follow up with these three things next Tuesday. So I've put these templates in this shared folder for you, so that way you can work on those. And they're kind of prodding them along, because the area where the engineer may fall flat in this is the engineer says, yeah, but this one project I'm working on, they need this. So I'm going to just ignore this, quote, sales opportunity. And so that other person who shepherds them along makes sure that they have a great experience for the customer. And so the customer says, wow, I really feel taken care of. And you're kind of finding a combination of skills that work together. By the way, that's way easier than trying to teach someone who understands the sales process all about all the engineering and technology that goes into it.
Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, we got to wrap up. One quick question. The election in the U.S. was held this week. I don't want to get into it too deeply or too divisively, but I do want to tackle one thing, because I have Brock here. Brock is from Westbury National out of Toronto. One of the things that the president-elect has said that he is going to look at repealing, and that's the NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. How does that impact the AV industry, and how does it?
I think there, if NAFTA were repealed, there will be a lot of structural changes where things are manufactured.
Okay.
Currently, a number of our large manufacturers have huge production out of Mexico, and that's, you know, it's high quality finished goods at a lower cost than you know, typically they've been able to manufacture in the U.S. Whether prices go up as a result of that is a long term thing, because they're not going to shut those factories down overnight, and I'm not entirely sure it's going to result in more American jobs. They just may manufacture further away, and because everything that comes in from China has a duty rate on it, if they put the same duty rate on Mexican product, and it used to be higher, but if they put the same duty rate on Mexican product as Chinese product, there might be a 4 to 6% sell-through increase in some pricing that will be passed on, but we're not going to see that impact for 4 or 5 years. The nice thing about Washington is that nothing happens really quickly.
Yeah, that's true. Ian, from your perspective in overarching sales and economy, what impact does a new presidency and a new changeover from one party to another have?
Well, so my perspective on this is that we often look for excuses for, well, the economy did this, or this political party did that. And what I will tell you is that the economy is made up of businesses and consumers who end up with a certain degree of confidence and advance their business or how they interact and conduct their commerce. And I'm a big fan of, you can create your own economy. So when you see things change in the market, the companies that thrive will see those indicators and will respond to it. Or they will say, look, here's where I think the industry is going, and I'm going to get there ahead, so that way I can dominate that piece of the market. So for me, when I look historically at different administrations, sir, there are certain industries that change because of the administration, but I think it's more of a psychological mindset that I would tell people, look, embrace this and say, oh, because of this, now I'm going to be very deliberate about how I grow my business, and remarkably, they'll succeed. Yeah. But if they say, oh, I can't possibly succeed because there's a new administration, that will also become true.
They won't, because they said they won't.
Yeah.
Mr. Greenblatt, you'll have the last word, political or economy.
I mean, the thing that I'll agree. I'm not going to take a particular side other than the fact that we all have to be on our toes, and we have to read what's the climate, and we I think that you can win no matter which direction things go in, and even in bad economy, people were able to reinvent their businesses so that they were able to capitalize on new opportunities. And I think that as long as we continue to innovate, I think that that's what's important for us.
The sun came up Wednesday morning.
Did it?
The stock market.
I was amazed.
Stock market did not crash. All of the forecasts of gloom and doom. My interest in being here on election night amongst Americans watching was to see which half of the room was going to emigrate to Canada.
Yeah, and you were going to take them back with you.
And I'll just take
them
back.
Were you selling tickets?
I have a large house.
Because Brock, let me tell you, a lot of my friends in Canada said that they had been raising money because you guys were going to build a wall.
Yeah. All right, on that note, Mr. Brock McGinnis, thank you, sir. How do people find you?
Brock@westbury.com, brock.emma, actually. We got rid of that last
Why?
Address.
Yeah.
And I'm Brock McGinnis on Twitter.
All right, very good. Mr. Greenblatt?
You could reach me at Steve Greenblatt on social media, and my website is controlconcepts.net.
All right, very good. And Mr. Altman, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. And for me, it's very simple. It's just Ian Altman on Twitter and ianaltman.com. And if you don't find me there, then it's somebody else.
All right, very good. Thank you, guys. New gang of guests, so we'll do introductions here real quick before we get started. Mr. Brad Grimes, kind of our host for this week. He is from Infocom. How are you, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me, Tim.
I say kind of because this is not you are not the organizer of this event. You just hang out and communicate.
I've got the easiest job at the event.
Absolutely, you do.
I mean, it's talking to wonderful folks like you. This is the easy part.
Yeah.
But now everybody behind the scenes, everyone on Gretchen Zito's and Betsy Jaffe's team, they put it on, and I think they put on another good one.
Yeah, absolutely. And also with us is Gina Sansevero from FSR. How are you?
I'm doing well, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And last but not least, buddy and pal, Frank Pisano from Chief.
Good to see you again, Tim.
Good to see you.
It's been a while.
It's been 15 minutes. We had breakfast sort of together. So, let's get started here. We just had one of the presenters, Ian Altman, and on talking about same side selling, and that interview I did with him about a month or so ago for Infocom Today impacted me as somebody who's developing as a salesperson. Frank, as somebody who deals in customer relationships, does that make sense for our industry, trying to solve people's problems and being honest with them if our puzzles don't fit their puzzles?
Absolutely. I mean, I think he said so many things that resonated with everyone in that room. I got a chance to talk to him afterwards, and it was just you could tell the people in the room just, you know, were on his every word. And it's not easy to do. It's an exceptional event, but it's long. Yeah. And there's, it starts early in the morning, and you know, it goes late at night. Let me tell you that.
Well,
for him to go in the afternoon and have everyone on every one of his words, you know that his presentation is resonating with everyone. So on the sales side, it was very interesting. I mean, I even tweeted out yesterday that there's things that he said that will apply right away when we get back to the office, especially since we're deep into planning for 2017. But a lot of the things that he said will be, you know, at our national sales meeting, we'll get out to the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Gina, this is not your first AVEC. Compare it to other AVECs or other business conferences you've been to.
I think this is my second or third AVEC, and I've also gone to the NSCA BLC, the Business Leadership Conference, and I think that they really give the attendees a chance to work on their business and not in their business. And by that, I mean, getting out of the day-to-day is really difficult for a lot of small and medium-sized business owners. And when you have a chance to literally leave that office and wrap your head around different concepts and hopefully bring them back and implement them, it gives you a leg up on a lot of people that weren't able to do that because they are still stuck in the daily grind. And once you see that your business doesn't fall apart around you once you leave it and once you start planning for it, I think that it really kind of energizes those people who are at these conferences. And I see it at the BLC, I see it here, and I think that's really the value that you take away is learning to work on your business, not in your business.
Yeah. Brad, Infocom has recently started talking about the strategic plan. Mm-hmm. Every 3 years, the board gets together along with Mr. Lebuskis and basically presents a roadmap for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
What does, and I'm not going to ask you to go through all the pillars, but in general, what is the overarching theme of the strategic plan for the next 3 years?
Well, I would say the overarching theme is ways of growing us beyond our industry. Infocom and the industry, everybody who's been involved for the last 10-15 years has been really excellent at growing this industry, professionalizing it, getting trained folks in it, coming up with great solutions. We feel like the next step, we and the board and Infocom and a lot of our members feel like the next step is to grow beyond our industry to the market. So market growth means going into enterprise organizations that have robust centralized technology roadmaps and making sure that they understand the effect that AV systems have on their the outcomes that they want to achieve. It's being able to say, yes, we can help you increase productivity by X percent with a system that does these things for you, whether it's a unified communication system or it's a better presentation system or something like that. So the overall theme, and there are many ways that Infocom's going to support the industry in it, is to grow the market. So we're distinguishing between industry growth, which has been gangbusters for a while, and market growth, which is really expanding us beyond and having more people see themselves in the AV ecosystem. And that's the biggest thing that we're going to try to do for the next 3 years.
Okay. I would be remiss if we didn't talk about some industry stuff and things of that nature. I did broach the whole election thing with our guests at the end. I'm not going to ask who you voted for or what you think of the outcome, specifically politically. But in earnest, and I kicked it off with Brock on purpose because Brock has a unique position. Brock is in Canada. He's in Toronto, and there are a couple of initiatives that the president-elect is looking at doing. Frank, you were in the room, you heard what Ian was talking about with the different economies, and you make your own economy, right? You make your own deal. But Brock did bring up some significant financial possible issues. How big of an issue is the transition between one administration and another for our industry?
Well, it's not like we didn't know it was coming.
Well,
there's an election every 4 years.
There is. Okay.
So the nice part too is we're constantly looking at trends and what's going on in the industry. I have a team that's business development to figure out what some of the other vendors are doing out there as well. So we're constantly looking at the trends. We're paying for the data, the iSupply data. So we try to keep our finger close to the pulse of what's going on with others out there, and I think that'll help us with what happened. But again, there's no excuses. We know that this was coming, and our team back at corporate is working on the efficiencies every day. So regardless of what decisions are made, we have efficiencies that go directly to our customer base. So. Whether you're excited about the election results or disappointed, I think that as Ian said, there's no excuses. We got to get there. We got to still deliver, and we still got to keep moving forward.
Yeah, Gina, one of the areas that you specifically cover is education. Lots have been said in general about trying to increase the number of people who go to college and attend college and get their degrees. How can FSR or our industry help educators connect more with the people coming up through those ranks?
I think we're already doing a really good job of that by providing technology that does bridge that gap and quite literally having people who didn't have access to education be able to receive online degrees and things like that. And the infrastructure that our industry provides kind of builds those foundations for that type of a technology. And what we're seeing is that different types of teaching and learning and classroom styles are really inviting different students that might not have liked that traditional lecture type of environment or the sage on the stage type of environment. They like the more hands-on. And so they were originally turned off by college, and we're seeing a lot of those technologies being utilized to promote the buzzword collaboration, right? So they promote collaboration, they promote active learning, they promote interactivity between the students, and becomes much more student focused. And whether you're a student who's 18 years old or you're a student who's 45 or 50 years old, it doesn't matter, because you're all peers at that level and you're teaching each other, and the teacher becomes the moderator. Those technologies that our industry provides allows that bridge to exist.
Did you use 45 for 50 because you think that's old?
I don't know. I'm on my way there, I promise. One day.
One day.
Oh, goodness. Another gray hair. All right. Mr. Grimes, we had a nice conversation with Dave Lubuskas the other day. One of the things he said was about how Infocom International is growing more internationally. Mm-hmm. Talk for a second about the different areas that you guys are moving into and how you're doing that.
Well, I mean, obviously, yeah, Infocom International is an international organization, in so much as we have trade shows in China and India and South America, and the ISC show, the huge one in Europe, we're a part owner of that show. So from a trade show point of view, yes, we have a great global footprint. But we also want to do the same things that we do here over there. And there are parts of the world that are hungry to professionalize an AV industry. And some of them are really advanced in the way that they talk about AV as a technology platform for solving problems and creating outcomes. In India, for instance, they talk a lot about the digital cities initiatives over there and the way that they're going to use technology to really modernize the country. And they do see AV as a critical component of that. So in one way, they were, I don't want to say a blank slate, but they were not as far along with legacy AV business and systems and relationships as we were here. So they're hungry for, okay, how do we take this kind of technology and professionalize it and get trained folks and get all the best knowledge and, really make our country a technologically advanced country. So that's exciting. So we take the type of model that we do here with standards and certification and training and education, and we do try to put it out in India and South America. We have a great program going on. We have lots of people down there working on it. And really, there's nobody working in North America in the AV industry that doesn't have business overseas or doesn't have a client who has business overseas. Or I mean, this isn't it's a global industry, whether we like it or not, and in part because we've enabled it, you know, to everything to be global. I mean, if it weren't for the AV industry, a lot of things couldn't be as global as they are now. So, so you know, we've seen a lot of great success expanding overseas. Some countries, it's obviously, you know, we're further along than others, but it's critical to our membership here, to our membership there, because it is just one big global industry, and we want to give the same resources there as we have here.
Frank, I want to pick on you for a little bit about that specific thing, because Milestone, company that owns Chief, you guys exhibit ISC, you have global offices. How do you translate literally and translate figuratively outside the U.S.?
So international growth is a huge focus for Milestone. We've obviously been established in the U.S. for quite some time. We have a very large team, but internationally is where a lot of our double-digit plus growth is expected. We're constantly growing that team, that organization. I think I mentioned earlier we have a national sales meeting coming up, or I can't call it national anymore. It's an international meeting. We bring in a lot of people from across the pond, as they say, and that team is constantly growing. There's a lot of new faces. Obviously, Milestone's expanded with multiple brands, but we've expanded over there quite a bit. Just what Brad said, we're working very closely a lot of times with our counterparts, because these projects, our customers are getting involved into much more a global outreach. And there's projects we're working on right now that are multiple countries. And being a global organization helps our value proposition, because we're able to accommodate those projects.
How so? I mean, because you said it increases your value proposition to clients here or clients overseas?
So clients here that are doing projects that are expanding. Maybe it's a digital signage rollout that's in multiple countries, and they want a consistent message, a consistent experience that they have here in the States, and they want that same consistency overseas.
All right, very good. Gina, we'll wrap up with you. You've been in the industry a long time. You're not that old, but you have been in the industry a few years. Totally just walked into that.
Look, you're sitting so far away.
I am, but still, I am going to get hit. How has the industry changed over the last few years? In what significant ways?
So I feel like is it fair to say I feel like it's less competitively charged and more friendly? I feel like people are willing to help each other where they weren't necessarily before. Things like the AVEC and conferences like that really give us an opportunity to sit in a non-competitive environment and create relationships. And I think that those relationships then are sustained and maintained outside of these conferences. So I feel like people are more welcoming and more open. Not that we weren't friendly, I guess, but
no. But I get exactly where you're going from, because you're right. It go back to Ian Altman's talking points about same side selling. It's not adversarial. It's not a winner take all. It's not a game. It's a relationship. It really is. And trying to help somebody solve a problem, and being honest with them. And if you can't, well, you know what, Gina, I can't help you, but Frank here has got exactly what you need. And how do I know that? Because I have a relationship with Frank because of events like this, and I know, in general what his strong points are, and, it's not golf, but other than that, what his...
You'd think it would be he plays so often.
Be, yes, absolutely. All right, wrapping up here, what does AV look like in a year, Brad? Or maybe 5 years.
In a year. Well, it continues to evolve as a core component of enterprise technology strategies. A lot of what we talk about here and what Ian Altman talks about is all part of the same message. I mean, the reason that we have international reach now is because we have gotten into the same side selling mindset, where all I want to do is solve this person's problem. You mean you're going to have this same conference in six other countries? Well, I can standardize it. I can roll it out in all these places, and I have partners or I have sales forces. So it's all part of, again, listening and finding that solution to their problems. But in a year, we're going to continue to be more engaged in enterprise strategies. I mean, it's a core component of the way organizations work, and we're going to have conversations that reflect that, and we're going to be even more crucial technology partners to a lot of different types of companies, enterprises, a year from now.
Yeah, very good.
And I think kind of to that, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. You're good.
I think kind of to that point, you brought up partners and going back to the friendly, right? Organizations like USAV and PS&I really allow that to happen. And I think that's why they're flourishing now. They're so successful because they've created those partnerships to allow for global expansion. So if you're doing a project for, you know, Bank of America in New York City, and Bank of America wants you to do their, you know, China office and maintain it, you might not be able to send a whole bunch of people over there as a small or medium-sized integration company, and you have USAV partners or PS&I partners that have locations out there and can help with either a labor force or a managed service, you know, force or whatever that may be. So again, I feel like 5-10 years ago, I've been in the industry 11 years, if you wanted to know.
Put a number on it.
I feel like 11 years ago, people were so afraid of, like, somebody's going to steal my intellectual property of what you're connecting black boxes. Like, your guys don't know anything different than the guys at the integration down the road, the integration company down the road. So I really think that kind of organization as preferred partners and things like that has really grown in the past 10 years.
Well, and it goes back to your statement about helping each other out, mm-hmm. and sharing information and learning, you know, getting to know your competitors. Because we all have core competencies, right? We all have things that we do really well. None of us do everything well. I'm sorry. But there is, you know, there's two or three things that we nail. We hit a home run. And if we can't help, if we can't solve their problem, then we do pass them on to somebody else. Mm. No. All right, Mr. Frank Pisano, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How do people find you or Chief?
At Pisano Frank on Twitter. I don't have to say the W's anymore, right? Just milestone.com.
You don't have to.
To get access to all of our brands. I know. Thank you. Appreciate that. Speaking of gray hair.
Yeah. Gina Sanchez of Arrow. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, as always.
How do people find you or FSR?
At Gina Sands, at FSR_EDU, and FSRinc.com.
All right, very good. And Mr. Brad Grimes, thank you, sir.
Well, thanks for coming. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for the space and everything.
Sure. It's a beautiful room.
It's a beautiful room.
Wish you all could see this.
Yeah. How do people find you and Infocom?
I'm on Twitter at BGrimesDC. I would have to pull out my phone to double check that, but I think that's right.
I think that's right.
Obviously, Infocom is at Infocom, and everything that we do is at Infocom.org.
All right, very good. My name is Tim Albright. Don't follow me, but go by the website if you would, please. Lots of great folks have done really great work on it. Aviation.tv, Aviation.tv. You'll find this program, a host of others. So check that out if you would, please. Aviation.tv. Thanks so much for listening. This has been AV Week.